Welcome to Winging It in Motown Radio. I'm your host, Jeff Hancock. I'm here with JJ and Kyle and Graham on his dial-up internet. How the hell are you guys doing?
It's the greatest night ever, Jeff.
Best day ever.
Thumbs up all around for everybody, except the Wings because they lost last night. But yeah. They had won like four in a row. It was their first loss of 2016. 2-1 since we last chatted. Thoughts on the game last night and everything since last week?
Yeah, that didn't really matter at the Red Wings for losing that game. But I think we all had it chalked up as a loss even before the Red Wings went on that four-game win streak where it just like felt every game they got closer to deserving a loss. And it's like they just got to L.A. and they were tired and whatever, and they had Jimmy Howard playing. It's like, screw it, they're going to lose. And they even made it a better game than they otherwise could have. So
yeah,
I think everybody's just kind of hoping. It's like, okay, well, there's your loss. Now you guys can stop playing like garbage maybe and go out in your next game and, you know, do well again.
Yeah, I think that the entire West Coast trip so far has been, even though, you know, they've only lost one game, has been very, you know, it's been the Peter Mrazek show, basically. I mean, it's been pretty rough, but what matters is that they won games, so, yeah, I don't know. Last night was, I had already chalked last night up as a loss anyways, before we even started the trip, so they lost, so that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, considering how they've played in back-to-back so far this year, I mean, to be pretty competitive against a very good Kings team on the second half of a back-to-back, whatever.
Yeah, it's funny because I came out of that game last night and they, like, were looking really, really good. I was like, oh, okay, this is sick. And then they just kind of farted a lot and then, you know, whatever. But, yeah.
I think at this, at the end of the second, I think we were all kind of expecting, like, all right, the legs are gone. You know, LA's just going to run him out of the building. And, I mean, LA scored, but then for the most of that period, Detroit was a better team. So it sucks that they didn't get the goal to tie it up. But, I mean, you don't really want to say there's moral victories, but I'm a lot better with how they played than some of their other losses on those back to backs this year.
Yeah, it was definitely a little bit more tolerable.
It wasn't a moral victory, but at least it wasn't a demoralizing loss.
Yeah, they didn't lose 6-0. Yeah.
Well, speaking of demoralizing losses, the Red Wings conveniently lost Drew Miller to a torn meniscus, demoralizing to the penalty kill, of course, because he's the sole reason they were successful the previous two games before LA. But because he got hurt and put on a long-term IR, Kyle Quincy is now back. I mean, let's just dive into the whole salary cap shenanigans, convenient injury, seven defensemen. I mean, it's all on the table. I'm going to JJ first here just because he seems to have the most off the top of his head knowledge of the CBA and how all that shit works. So try to explain it to people listening, to the common man, to dumb people who haven't read the giant-ass legal document that is the NHL CBA.
I will try, but I'm not sure that I can because I'm not sure how well I understand it. Elliot Friedman put in his 30 thoughts today, like, how can Ken Holland say they've got a $66 million cap, and then he says, you need to go to Article 50.10, Part B, Illustration Number 4, and that explains it all. Illustration Number 4 essentially talks about you got, if you got a guy starting the year on long-term injured reserve, that puts you over the cap, and the Red Wings were over the cap. They were like at $72.6 million or so. Then, you know, you can replace his salary, but, you know, when he comes back, you've got to get cap compliant, and apparently that's what stuck them with a $66 million cap. Nothing I've read about that makes sense. I've spoken with the guy who runs General Fanager a few times, and he can't make sense of it. Basically, nobody who understands the cap knows what the hell that means as far as timing, and if it is a case where it's like the timing of putting a guy on LTIR screwed up their cap situation so much that they had to put Drew Miller on IR to get Quincy off, and that's the thing, it's like it doesn't make sense that because we originally thought it was a case of, well, Ken Holland is just trying to get under the $71.4 million cap in order to avoid having bonus overages, or maybe trying to bank a little bit of space before the trade deadline. But if that was the case, then they wouldn't have needed to put Drew Miller on long-term injured reserve, and they wouldn't have needed to run the whole freaking circus that they did the other day on as far as doing that. So if there's a definition of replaced salary, because essentially when a guy gets hurt and goes on long-term injured reserve, you can replace his up to his entire cap hit with other players, even to the point where it puts you over the cap. So if there's a definition of replaced salary that says once that guy comes back, the people who were considered his replaced salary have to be shuffled around, like they can't just go back to being normal salary, then that would make a reading where the Red Wings got stuck with $66 million. But I've never seen that, and nobody that knows anything about the cap has said that, other than that's what Ken Holland says. And, I mean, Ken Holland's lied to us before, so I don't know. I don't know what the hell is going on. I guess I'll believe it when I see it, or if somebody can explain it to me fully, but I guess next year I'm going to have to spend way more attention to the daily transactions to figure it out. And
I'm
just cap geek.
Yeah, I honestly, when I think about it, I mean, I don't really know much about, you know, what would they call a capology. So I can't really explain it to you. All I know, like, from what I gathered out of all of this is that we are seeing Ken Holland starting to pay for what he's created, basically, and that's kind of a crappy situation in terms of cap with some of the bad contracts he's given out. The Kindle one, you know, you just look at contracts like, you know, people want to say the applicator one, but that one's not in play yet. So, you know, the Erickson one and all that stuff. So I think it's just, I don't know, he's really, really like riding a thin line right now. And it's just, it looks bad, you know, especially with like the Weiss contract and the buyout and,
yeah. And that's part of what Friedman explains, is that, like, essentially, if they could have buried a bunch of guys in the minors to, like, in the AHL right at the beginning of the season before they had to put Datsyuk on IR, then this wouldn't be a problem.
Right.
So even if it is a case where it's totally accurate that they kind of got screwed by the timing of it all, it has to do with the way Ken Holland manages the cap. If it's true that they accidentally stuck themselves with this $66 million cap, then it's a factor of Ryan Martin not knowing the CBA that he's essentially been the capologist for a long time, which is a mistake, and or Kenny Holland with getting them in the waiver situation that they are. So,
yeah, someone's not doing a great job.
Yeah,
I find it hard, and I mean, maybe this is just me being kind of naive, but I find it hard to believe that a team that employs Ryan Martin and countless other lawyers, accountants, financial wizards wouldn't have understood the cap implications of, you know, of what transpired with this cap number. So I don't know.
Yeah, see, I'm there too.
I mean,
it doesn't make sense.
How can a person, because I mean, if Elliot Friedman, who I respect immensely, is able to do some research, probably talk to some people, as I'm sure he did, and be able to come up with a plausible explanation as to why this cap number is at $66 million within a couple of days, how is it possible that Ryan Martin and his team and others within the Wings organization couldn't have figured that out when this all went down? You know, before they actually had to make all these moves. And even then, if they were, so they were what, $4.5 million, I think? That ended up being the difference between the upper limit of the 71.4 and where they're at. I was trying to think, I've seen people say, well, why didn't they put guys on waivers, or why didn't they just send, you know, make some paper transactions and send all their waiver exempt guys down? I don't think the waiver exempt guys would have gotten them that much higher in the grand scheme of things.
Well,
I mean,
yeah, they could have.
I remember, because you had what, Mrazek, Larkin. I don't think was Marchenko on the team at the beginning of the year.
Mrazek is not. He's waiver eligible. Mrazek is.
Yeah, he's now. I'm talking.
He's now. Yeah.
I'm talking at the opening day, which is when this number was set.
Yeah.
You had Larkin, Mrazek. I feel like Xavier Ouellette was on the team.
I don't think he was.
I don't remember.
He was listed as a scratch on the opening day, on the opening night.
Huh.
But that was 2 days after opening day, so.
Right. So you'd have to go to the transit. Either way, I don't think they had $4.5 million in variable, not exposing guys to waivers, kind of thing. Maybe that was the time to do stuff like Ferraro or Anderson, which still hasn't happened, or Kindle. I mean, who knows? But, you know, I mean, hindsight's 20/20, right? So it's easy to kind of look and go, I'm more inclined to believe, JJ, the latter part of your statement, which is really the situation is Holland mismanaging the cap with all the contracts he's given out.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when you're when you hand out big contracts, like, you really need to account for that stuff. So it seems like they didn't.
With the concept of, it doesn't make sense that like they wouldn't know this or that they would totally have screwed this up. But wasn't it Dale Talon like made a guy a free agent because he forgot to fax something, right?
Yeah. I mean, certainly it's possible. I don't know. It's just hard to believe that and the other concept too of, well, maybe, he never anticipated that he'd have a healthy roster. I mean, it's certainly, we joke about somebody's always hurt, but I mean, they had to have at least contemplated, oh crap, what are we going to do if everybody is healthy at the same time?
I think what ultimately happened was that Quincy's injury kind of screwed things up, because Datsyuk came off of IR the same day that Quincy and Franzen went on IR, but they didn't get full cap relief for Quincy. They got only like $3.25 million instead of $4.25, and that's because the long-term injury reserve lets you go over the cap up to that guy's salary, but there is a dead set limit of 10% over the cap that you can go. And with Quincy and Franzen on at the same time, they were at that. You can only go 7.14 million over, and they were, and they kind of went too far over, and I think that the million in relief that they didn't get for Quincy, I think that's what actually came back to bite them when he came back. It was a case of, I think that they did plan on, okay, we'll just LTIR Datsyuk, and then Franzen is going to play a few games, and then we know what's going to happen with him. But then they have a $4.25 million guy go down at like a really inconvenient time, and that was just the case. And then what's weird to me is just the timing of how Miller tears his meniscus, like the day they need a guy to get hurt, the day they need a guy who makes over $1 million to get hurt.
Let's be honest, guys. I mean, we can say whatever, but I'm pretty sure that entire situation is cooked.
I'm putting the tinfoil on for that. Absolutely. Yeah,
that is cooked.
And if Drew Miller gets, I think Drew Miller is going to get a 1 or 2 year contract this summer.
Absolutely.
In regards to going on long-term injured reserve now. And if he does, yeah, I'm going like full enemy of the state blog this summer.
Yeah, it's rough. Like, obviously there's really nothing that we can do to prove that Miller's injury isn't legit. And it could be, but it's just the whole, like, the way that it moved up. So Holland, he made his statement. He said, we're going to have to make some moves unless someone gets hurt tonight. And it's like, what happened in the third period? Oh, Drew Miller torn his fucking meniscus. Like, really? I mean, come on. I understand that it's hockey and injuries happen, but it just seems like, I don't know. I tinfoil hat for sure. It's weird.
If it is cooked, then I just want to say thank you, Drew Miller, for being the ultimate team player. Mm. You're amazing. You've shown what made me fall in love with you as a player in the first place.
Yeah.
That you're willing to, to go through that just so that Kyle Quincy could come back.
Although, let's be honest, maybe the whole on-ice hurting his knee thing wasn't really where he got hurt, and someone just took a stick and whacked him over the knee in the dressing room between periods. So it may not have been his choice. They're who's the most expendable but over $1 million?
All I know is that if he gets a 1 to 2 year deal, he better be signed for like minimum. Like, I don't want to see, like, 1.5 or, like, some sort of raise for him. Like, I don't want that. And if it does, I will scream.
I'd be okay with 950K. The maximum you could bury,
Yep, but he's going to get the, he'll get the Dan Cleary special, the 950, but million-dollar bonus if you pay, play 10 games.
Yeah, of course.
He's the new Dan Cleary. So just, you mentioned Cleary, not Cleary, oh, fuck. Fuck that guy. Quincy back. The whole question was, who are they going to scratch? We thought it would end up being Smith, unfortunately. It
should have been, been.
It wasn't, though. And they and Blashill played seven defensemen. Right call, wrong call, and what do we want to see moving forward?
I think it wasn't a bad call, because I thought, honestly, it was going to be Marchenko that was going to get scratched.
I mean, he kind of was there for a second.
Yeah, and he scored a goal, so that's good. I mean, good for him, because he's probably... I'm comfortable with saying that he's probably the best complete defenseman on the team right now. So, I think that running seven defensemen isn't something you want to do for a month straight. I don't think that's a smart move, because they obviously need help with offense and, I don't know.
Yeah, but if you need help with offense and your option is Joakim Andersson... I mean, I'd probably rather have Brendan Smith than Joakim Andersson out there.
Sure, of course, but you could, I don't know, get rid of him somehow, put him on waivers. I think his full cap hit is variable, so.
It is, yeah.
So, I mean.
Would you have to waive him in order to call someone up?
Yes.
Considering the cap situation now?
You would. You would have to waive him, and then you would have to call up Athanasiou, or, you know, it would probably end up being Athanasiou, so.
Yeah, they're not going to do that.
No, they're not, but it's stupid because they're winning games right now because of goaltending, and, you know, that's not sustainable.
I think playing 7D was a mistake, and I don't know, I agree with the whole concept of, like, I don't know that I wanted Joakim Andersson in the game instead. I kind of personally am tired of people asking Brendan Smith to be played at forward, but... Honestly, I got to kind of bite the bullet on that one and say Brendan Smith maybe should have played forward in that game. I just don't think that they couldn't get breakouts, and it seemed like a lot of the times it was because they weren't entirely sure where their defensive partner was, and a lot of times the forwards weren't exactly sure whether they should be covering for a guy making his third pinch of the second period or not, and leading to an odd man rush again. So... It just seems like they were less combobulated than they should have been. And also, like, I don't know if Blashill told them, like, I don't know which one of you I want to scratch. I'm just going to play you all, and the one that sucks is going to be the odd man out. But if that's the case, that's kind of a dumb way to do it, because, it showed that Brendan Smith should have been the scratch. But I don't know. It just didn't work. I didn't like it.
You can't get any flow going with 7D, because they keep switching up the partners. So, I guess I understood the concept of trying to get Quincy just kind of slowly into the game, but it's like, I don't know, you kind of look back and just go, you know what, just bite the bullet, scratch somebody. But the problem is, it's still probably the optimal lineup, because the alternative is putting Andersson in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like Joakim Andersson being in the lineup last night results in a victory. So...
Yeah,
that's true.
He could play. I mean, it's not kill, something though, right? I would want to see going.
He could block shots. He could defend.
Could have, but he
I'm just
wouldn't
saying
have.
The last person who tried going with 7D ended up in a coma because of an apple. So just don't do that. Snow White joke, guys.
Oh, I was thinking John Cooper in the playoffs last year did a lot against the Wings. But hey, Snow White, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Disney movies, family show. Here we are.
I don't know. Have I ever seen
the classic?
I don't know, Jeff. Have you?
I'm trying to segue out of this.
Whatever.
Ah, that's win radio.
DJ broke Jeff.
This is good radio. Podcast, whatever.
So we want to keep talking about 7D?
No.
No?
No. What I want to talk about now is Quincy's usage, because I actually thought that he was fairly good in the LA game. But he was also a little bit sheltered. What do you guys think about the idea that they are going to, or they should, like, super-duper shelter Quincy until the trade deadline, like give him Jakob Kindle minutes, just to see if they can like build up his trade value.
Well, I personally think that's a great idea, but I honestly don't think they're going to try and do that. I think they're going to try and keep him. Like, it's getting to the time of the year where my Twitter feed is filling up with people like, ooh, this guy is possibly on the trade block. What would you give up for him? And, like, my first response is, well, you can't give anything up for him because you have to dump a shit ton of salary first. So, when I think about it, the only team really right now that is going to be possible for a trade is the Jets, because they are willing to take on salary and they have shit to get rid of that the Red Wings need. So I don't know. I think they should shelter Quincy either way, but whether they're trying to build his trade value or not, because it was kind of a serious injury for a defenseman. So, because like an injury like that will screw up your lateral movement all day long. So I think that should, whether they're trying to build trade value or not, they need to do that just because it's the smart thing to do. And they have other defensemen who are better. So.
Yeah, I think because let's be honest, Jonathan Erickson is not coming out of the lineup, even though he should.
No,
So if you rolled a third pairing of Quincy Erickson, that actually wouldn't be a bad third pairing.
You think?
In theory.
What's your top four then?
Yeah, how do you protect Cronwall in that case?
You put...
He's bad too. He's awful.
I put Cronwall with Green because that worked. I think...
Yeah.
Smith-Marchenko's your top pick. I think it's just a numbers thing because you can't split up DeKaiser Marchenko.
No, I think
them up. DeKaiser Marchenko are what DeKaiser Quincy were last year, which is that dependable pairing that they're not gonna really drive possession really well, but they're gonna hold their own against top competition, and then you can free up the other pairs to hopefully pick up some of that slack. I think a Cronwall Green pairing getting, I don't want to say sheltered, but softer minutes could actually be pretty good because they were good earlier this year when they were paired together. And then Smith will have to sit just because Erickson won't. Otherwise, I would play a third pairing of Quincy Smith and let that pair would actually be really good if you could give those guys. I'd be comfortable with that.
You can't pair Quincy and Smith.
Didn't we learn that?
They tried to do that earlier.
Yeah, it was awful.
What?
It's going to work this time. Quincy's been fixed. He's bionic now, so.
I
thought you were going to say he's been neutered.
Can we put Smith back with Cronwall? They played well like 4 years ago together.
I don't know if I'm cool with
Cronwall. Cronwall's garbage now, so no.
But Smith is good now. Didn't you read everything Prashant said the last Cronwall's, month and a half?
Cronwall's descent has gone further down than Smith's little baby step up he took. So
it was a very large baby though.
I've seen lots of baby steps, and you know what usually happens when babies take large? They fall on their ass.
That was last night.
Yeah,
he gets back up.
Waddles his way around all over again.
Guys, I thought we were past this Brendan Smith sucks thing. Guy, come on,
turned a corner. He had last night.
One game does not make a season nor a career.
Yeah, but Brendan Smith has been not that good for a while. So
turn the corner, and there's a two-man rush around the corner.
Yeah. So I mean, too long didn't read. The Red Wings' defense is not good. It is bad.
Ultimately, they do have to switch up the pairings. They're not working. I thought that Blash had learned his lesson about Cronwall and Erickson. And then he like mysteriously put them back together for seemingly no reason. And big surprise, the Red Wings are bad at puck possession again. I don't know. I guess correlation doesn't equal causation, but yeah, it fucking does. Cronwall, Erickson, the entire reason the Red Wings are not playing well together. That's it. Hot take. Print it.
Speaking of hot takes, the Wings are trading for Stamkos and Drouin.
Yeah, that's true.
They can't trade Nyquist now because he's ice cold, so forget it. Now they got to trade Tatar.
Yeah, you know what? Fuck it. Fuck the trade talk topic. I want to talk about Nyquist. I'm just going to fuck that segue.
Welcome.
Nyquist.
You're welcome.
Graham, I'm going to you because you talked about it in the chat a little bit last night and in your recap. Nyquist, the fuck, man?
I don't know. And the worst part is he's playing on a line that he was actually quite successful last year, but... It's the worst part is he hasn't scored in 10 games, which I guess is fine because goal scorers are naturally streaky unless you're like superstar elite, and Nyquist is not that. So whatever. He's not getting looks. Like, he's not, I don't have the sense watching him that he's about to break out and he's about to get goal, or he's getting chances. Like, you watch him and the eye test is he's just kind of around the perimeter. He's not taking shots. And Nyquist, when Nyquist is playing well, he's getting a lot of shots, and he's not getting that. He's playing with Zetterberg and Abdelkader, so there's no reason why he shouldn't be at least involved offensively. He's still getting power play time. I mean, the power play in general is Harkovich. So, I mean, that's not just Nyquist, but I mean, he's a part of that. He scored a lot of power play goals last year. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's baffling as to what happened to him, but he just doesn't look good.
Honestly, I think, and you could maybe boil it down to the power play itself. It's so bad, and it's just, I don't even know how to really explain it at this point, but it's so anemic. It's not even like, it goes cold, goes hot. It's just cold, always. And it just, they can't make room for shots. They're playing on the perimeter. They're playing sloppy. They can't bring the puck into the zone. They can't set up well. It's just, it's not working. And Nyquist's bread and butter is, if he's going to shoot the puck, he's more often than not going to score, because he's a very accurate shooter, but he's not shooting the puck nearly enough for a guy that needs, like him. He needs to be shooting the puck, and he's just not doing that. So the power play has been a culprit of that, because, you know, when you're scoring a lot of goals, like last season, when you're scoring a lot on the power play, and you're not now, then your confidence is at an all-time low, and he's just not playing confident, and it's painful to watch, man, because it's like, Nyquist, remember, at one point was the most exciting player on the team, and now it's just like, I don't even know he's there, and it sucks. So
16 shots on goal in those 10 games that he hasn't scored.
That's total. Very bad. That guy should be averaging 4 shots a game. I mean, be like Larkin. Just throw it at the damn net. Whatever. I mean, him and Tatar probably have the best shot on the team. So, in terms of accuracy, velocity, and everything, like, he's, I don't know. He needs to be shooting the puck. And
Graham had mentioned Nyquist doesn't even look like he's particularly close to a breakout. Like, Tatar had looked. He looked like he was getting close to a breakout. Now he's scored in consecutive games, and it looks like he's starting to put it back together again. And Nyquist is not. I mean, he looks defensively good, but he's not moving the puck up ice. He's not taking enough shots. When he does, it feels like he's gotten more blocked than usual. It's just fucking annoying.
It is annoying.
You know, it's annoying that the Wings can't. Fuck, I lost my train of thought. God damn it. I am off today. I had this really good segue about the Wings not being able to call up prospects, but Michelle can call them up in her prospects report, and I lost my train of thought. So, hey, guys, listen to the prospects report, because Michelle's really smart.
The Griffins continued to climb up the standings last week, winning 3 of their 4 games and picking up a total of 6 out of 8 possible points. They boast a record of 21-11-0-1 and 43 points, which puts them second in their Central Division behind only the Rockford Ice Hogs, and third in the Western Conference. Sunday, January 3rd, they picked up a 4-1 win over the Manitoba Moose, then fell on Tuesday 2-1 to the same team. Friday against the Milwaukee Admirals, they picked up a 4-2 win, and then got a shootout win on Saturday against the Lake Erie Monsters. Injuries continue to be an issue for the team, as they're still without Andreas Athanasiou, Mitch Callahan, Dan Cleary, Tom McCollum, Tristan Grant, and Xavier Roulette. They missed Nick Jensen for a game, but he returned on Saturday night, and they did get Tomasz Nosek back on Friday night. Alden Hirschfeld was called up from the Toledo Walleye to help fill in up front, and then Friday night during the Milwaukee Admirals game, he had a seizure and collapsed on the bench in what was a really horrifying event to watch. He was stretchered off the ice and taken immediately to the hospital, where he received medical attention. On Sunday, he and the Griffins released a statement where he said he felt good, he was going back back home to Toledo to recover and take it easy for a few days, but he was doing well. With another player on the injured list, the Griffins signed Toledo Walleye forward AJ Jenks to a professional tryout on Sunday afternoon. With Xavier Ouellette out with a concussion, Richard Niedermel played in his first Griffins game of the season on Friday night and promptly got into a fight. He got into a second fight early in the second period and was then ejected from the game. Scott Zarnelson was also called up from Toledo to play on defense, and Saturday night, Coach Nelson chose to dress 7 defensemen and 11 forwards. Zarnelson played most of the game, and Niedermel got 2-3 shifts. With so many players out with injuries, the Griffins have needed more players to step up, particularly some of their better players. In the last 4 games, Eric Tangrady had 5 points, Anthony Mantha and Marty Firk had 4 points each, Nathan Page and Mark Zangerle had 3 points each, and Zach Nastasiak and Tyler Bertuzzi each picked up 2 points. Pretty much every week now, for the last few months, I've talked about Anthony Mantha, Marty Firk, and Eric Tangrady being hot players. So it's no coincidence that those are 3 of the top 4 scorers on the team right now. Eric Tangrady leads the way with 28 points, Andy Mealy second with 25, and Anthony Mantha has 23, and Marty Firk has 19. Tomasz Nozek had a really slow, rough start to the season, picking up just 1 point in his first 15 games. Even though he's playing well, he wasn't getting rewarded with points. And it was a combination of bad luck, poor usage, line mates, all of the above. He's been getting hotter recently, though. He has 8 points in his last 18 games, but he has 4 points in his last 3. And the 2 games that he's played in since getting sent back down from Detroit, he's been fantastic. As Wings fans, we've talked a lot this season about wanting younger forwards from Grand Rapids called up, and guys like Anderson, Miller, and Glendening to be scratched or possibly put on waivers. And Nozek is one of the guys that we had speculated about. Well, we finally got to see him make his NHL debut, and he looked good. And Jeff Blashill always talked about how he would have no problem playing Nozek in any situation. And to back that up, he did put him on the penalty kill in Detroit in, I think, his 2nd or 3rd game. Looking at Noshek's stats in Grand Rapids, though, before his call-up, it wouldn't have looked like he was a top candidate. However, those production numbers that he has this season are not indicative of his play. There's a lot of context that you wouldn't get looking at the stat sheet that are really important for how Noshek's season has gone so far. Last year in his rookie season, he missed 16 games at the beginning of the year when he sustained a serious cut to his hand. It took him a little while once he got back from the injury to really get going, but through the course of the season, he became a go-to guy for Jeff Blashill. He was either first or second line center. He had good line mates. He was on the power play, on the penalty kill. If Blashill needed a key face-off in the defensive zone, he would put Nozek out. Nozek earned a top role on the team, and Blashill rewarded him with ice time and putting him in a position to best utilize the skills that he had. This year with Nelson coming in, Nozek's playing third line center, no power play. He has 4th line quality line mates, or guys that I would even say should be healthy scratches. And he had a really hard time adjusting to this new role and usage. On the post-game show last week, Bob Kayser was talking to one of the Griffins' assistant coaches, and he talked specifically about Nozek and how he really struggled with the new coaching staff coming in and the different philosophies that Nelson has compared to Blashill. The two coaches are really very, very different, and they have extremely different philosophies when it comes to putting a team together and player usage and how they want their players to play and what kind of roles they value. And you could see as the season went on this year, his confidence just got lower and lower and lower, and it was really painful to watch. He was on the upswing and getting more points a while before he got called up to Detroit, but I think that getting the call-up was huge for his confidence and his mental state. I disagree very strongly with the way that Nelson's using Nozek in Grand Rapids, but there isn't really anything we can do about it, and he seems determined to keep Nozek in that role. And if Nozy can succeed in the position that Nelson puts him in the usage, with the line mates that he has, he can succeed anywhere. I continue to be very pleased with the progress that Anthony Mantha's making and the points that he puts up and the way that he's playing. He's gotten much stronger and also better at using his size and his strength. Friday in the game against the Admirals, he had a drive to the net that was really exciting to watch because he essentially muscled his way through the defenders and pushed his way to the net with the puck on his stick. Saturday night against the Monsters, he did the puck protection in the corner like Henrik Zetterberg does, where he had the puck on his stick and he took one hand off his stick, put it out to protect the puck, keep the player away from him, made himself big, and the Monsters player couldn't get to the puck. When Mantha is on, he's almost unstoppable. It doesn't matter if it's skating the puck up ice, if it's protecting the puck, if it's getting the puck to the net, taking a shot, whatever it is. He continues to get better about being on more often, but I still have times when I watch him and I just want to kick him in the pants to get him going a little bit more, to snap him out of it, to make him pay attention. He'll still make the occasional quote-unquote lazy pass or do something, and you're like, come on, you know better than that. He's good now. He's really good, but he's not to the great part yet. And there's another step that he can take. He has it in him, and I keep waiting to see it. He's inching closer and inching closer and inching closer. He just needs to keep going and get there. Marty Firk has been somewhat of an unexpected surprise this year. From a guy that many people had written off to having 19 points in 24 games and being fourth on the team in scoring, Marty Firk has been good this year, and he continues to get better. The shot that he has, the release, he's improving his positioning and awareness on the ice. His skating has also gotten better, and he's faster now than he's ever been, so he's able to get to more pucks and do more things because he has a little bit more mobility and foot speed. One thing he still needs to work on is cutting down his penalties a little bit. He has 49 penalty minutes in 24 games. I think a majority of the penalties I've seen him take have been the result of him not being able to keep up, or what I call catch-up penalties. Things like hooking or tripping, where he gets behind and then ends up taking a poor penalty because he can't get to the puck, or he was out of position, or something of that nature. I'm really excited to see what he does with the rest of the season and where he ends up at the end of the year. Firk is one of the many Red Wings prospects who will lose waiver exemption next year. So at the beginning of next season, he'll have to clear waivers before being sent down to Grand Rapids. So what he ends up doing this season could have an impact on whether the Red Wings keep him, see if he could play in the NHL, put him on waivers, trade him, etc. Jared Coro has started the last 14 games for the Griffins and is 11-3-0 in those games. In the four games last week, he made 114 saves on 122 shots for a .934 save percentage. On the season, he has a 17-5-1 record, a .931 save percentage, and a 2.14 goals against average. That overall puts him as the third best goalie in the AHL. He has the second highest save percentage, third best in goals against average, and has the second most wins. Coro has been anywhere from really good to great this season, and without him, I don't know where the Griffins would be. AKDN86 on Twitter asked me what I think the ceiling for Jared Coro is. Right now, I think his ceiling in the NHL would be a very good backup goalie. I don't know if he would ever be what I would consider a clear number one starter on an NHL team, but I think he could be a very good backup. At 6'6", 220 pounds, he's a big goalie. He moves very gracefully. He can cover down low, post to post, just by dropping into butterfly. He has great reach. He's able to snag pucks with his glove, whether it be out of the air or through a crowd, simply because he has the reach. He doesn't get screened too often because not many players can screen him, and he seems to have found a good place mentally and with his confidence, whereas when he first came into the league, it could be a bad goal, or even not even a bad goal, just a goal, and it would throw him off his game, and you could tell that his confidence would go down, and the team might end up losing the game. Now he's at a point where he has confidence, but it's not just when they're winning. Even in the games that the Griffins were losing, it was clear that he wasn't letting it get to him. He was staying strong mentally, not overthinking things, and he seems to have found a good level place where he's not getting too high nor too low. It's possible if the Wings are looking for someone to back up Peter Mrazek in a few years who isn't Jimmy Howard, they could be looking at Jared Coro right now, but we really need more time to see how he continues to develop. It's too early for me to be comfortable saying whether he would be fit for that role or not. Down in Toledo, over the weekend, the Walleye were without second leading scorer Alden Hirschfeld and defenseman Scott Zarnozin and Richard Niedermel, along with goalie Jake Patterson, as all those players had been called up to the Grand Rapids Griffins as reinforcements. Despite missing some significant players, the Walleye still won both of their games over the weekend against the Reading Royals, having a 3-1 win on Friday night and a 4-2 win on Sunday. The Walleye now have a record of 20-10-1-3 with 44 points on the season, which puts them at first in the Northern Division and third in the Eastern Conference. In other prospects news, World Junior gold medalist Ville Saarijärvi returned to Flint and played two games with the Firebirds. He had an assist in a 3-2 overtime loss on Saturday and didn't play on Sunday. I'm not sure why, but I'm guessing it would have to be an injury for him not to be in the lineup. Over in the QMJHL, Adam Marsh put up 4 points in two games for the St. John Sea Dogs. He had one goal in three assists. He had a goal and an assist in a 5-2 win, and then two assists in a 5-4 win. He's currently third on his team in points with 33, and also third in goals with 17. Evgeny Svechnikov hasn't yet returned to Cape Breton from the World Juniors, so he hasn't played a game yet. In the Western Hockey League, Joe Hickett's returned to Victoria. Astoria and played two games for the Royals and registered two assists. He has 31 points in 31 games this season and is 11th among defensemen in points in the league, despite missing 13 games while away at the World Juniors. He's also 14th in the entire league in assists. Last year, the Wings decided not to sign defenseman Mark McNulty to his entry-level contract. He re-entered the draft, no one took him, and he returned to the Western Hockey League for his overage year. He's currently playing with the Moose Jaw Warriors. In the summer development camp, Yuri Fisher said that the Red Wings still considered him a prospect, even though he wasn't in the system and didn't belong to any team. It's been interesting to watch him this season. He has 37 points in 39 games and is actually 6th in the Western Hockey League in defenseman points and is tied with Joe Hicketts with 30 assists on the season. So he's actually having a very productive season as well, and I wonder if the Red Wings have completely given up on him and let him go with all the other defensemen they have in the system, or if they're kind of keeping an eye on him. At this point, if they decided to sign him and they wanted to bring him back in, it wouldn't cost them anything, so something to keep an eye on. Over in Europe, Christopher N. and Axel Holmstrom both returned to their SHL teams. N. played one game, registered two shots, and played 10 minutes and 13 seconds for Frölunda, and Holmstrom registered two shots, played 9 minutes and 32 seconds for Skellefteå. Over in the Finnish Liga, Julius Vatalo's been on quite a hot streak lately. He had a slow start to the season and went through a slump in October-November, but in his last 12 games, he's put up 7 points, 4 goals, and 3 assists. He's getting more shots on goal consistently, and he looks like he's playing with a little more confidence. Keep an eye on this kid. A couple weeks ago in an MLive article, Ken Holland was quoted as saying that both Evgeny Svechnikov and Joe Hicketts would be in Grand Rapids next year, and that in the next couple months they would decide if they were going to have Axel Holmstrom come over to Grand Rapids or stay in the SHL a little bit longer. Over the weekend, Ken Holland did an interview with Expressen and said that Holmstrom might be staying another year in the SHL. Holland said that there are currently no plans to put Holmstrom in the AHL next season. One of the things Holland said was that in his experience, Swedish talent often prefer to play in Sweden. So a couple weeks ago, it sounded like Holland was on the fence and hadn't yet decided if Holmstrom was going to come over and play in Grand Rapids. But right now, it sounds like unless Holmstrom really wanted to, he'll probably stay in the SHL for at least one more season. There are certainly advantages and disadvantages either way. I think the Swedish Hockey League is a good development league, and I've talked about it quite a bit before, but Axel Holmstrom is currently playing against a high level of competition in the SHL, and he's not playing against younger players. He's playing against older, experienced players, better goalies, and he gets the benefit of being closer to home. The two big factors that will probably determine when Holmstrom comes over is, one, when does he want to? Would he prefer playing in the SHL or the AHL as a developmental league? And the other is, where do the Red Wings think he'll be developed best? Now, right now, it honestly sounds like they don't have a strong preference one way or the other, that they're fine if he stays over in the SHL and continues his development there. We have a recent example of Mattias Janmark, who he stayed over in Europe. I was starting to wonder if he was ever going to come over, but he stayed over in the SHL. That was his developmental league. He came over, he didn't spend any time in the AHL, and he's in the NHL with Dallas right now. That could be a path that the Red Wings look to take with Holmstrom, maybe letting him stay in the SHL until he's ready for the NHL and then bringing him over. I don't really know for sure at this point, but right now it sounds like the Wings are content to let him stay at least another season over in Sweden and continue playing in the SHL and getting his development there. And that's what's going on in the world of Red Wings prospects.
Well, thanks, Michelle. I'm going to give it to JJ now before I fuck up another segue. So ask us some questions.
Phrasing on that, Jeff. I'm going to give it to JJ.
Well, you
give it to JJ before I fuck up anything else.
Right?
Jeez.
Can't wait for Denver.
Wing it.
Yeah, I know. Denver.
All right. It's time for...
Jeff and I might not come back. All right. Go ahead.
Yeah, you definitely should stay in Denver. It's...
No, I have a job and a wife. I'm definitely coming back to Boston.
Well, bring your wife to Denver with you. That's what I'm doing.
There you go.
That's what I'm doing.
She said no.
Yeah.
She's
cool marriage.
She's still cold from the Winter Classic, so.
you dragged her to the Winter Classic when she had, like, the death flu.
Yeah. She said, I'm not going. Go have fun with your internet friends. I said,
oh,
that's
nice.
That's such a sad statement. Really think
she
about
didn't.
It.
She didn't actually say internet friend. She said JJ and Graham, and I was like, and Kyle.
I didn't even remember.
And she was like, oh, the drunk. He was the drunk one from the wedding. And I said, yes, that was Kyle. I remember.
You have to be especially drunk to be remembered as the drunk one from the wedding because we were all toasted.
Oh yeah,
the drunk one from the wedding.
You were the. Well, you were one of the drunk ones from the wedding.
Okay.
But
yeah. because I was drunk, so I can confirm.
Yeah, no, you definitely were.
I thought.
Remember when we lifted you up?
Yeah, I have a picture of that. I gave a thumbs up. I gave two thumbs up.
I thought for sure, instead of the drunk one, we were going to be remembered as the fun table.
Oh, you were definitely the fun table. You were also the loud table, mm-hmm. which kind of corresponds with each other.
Yeah. Yep.
But she also did say the picture of us giving the thumbs up was a really good picture. She liked that one.
I like that picture.
Yeah.
I'm going to make that my profile pic soon.
There you go.
I remember taking that picture, so that's
nice.
that's kind of a bonus for me after that one.
But before we move into whatever, like the morning after when we went and got breakfast, it was just like Graham barely said a word, and it was just because he was.
I was afraid of vomit coming out. That's why. It was. I was hurting the next day. It was. I mean, it was totally worth it to be in the car for 12 hours after that. But yeah, it was a fun time though.
It was a good time. All right.
Okay, so reader questions. Gone over that. The very first one is about what's wrong with Nyquist, so we just talked about that. I hope we answered it fully enough for you, Holmstrom 96, because I like you, but we're not going to talk about it anymore. It's trade season, so let's go trying trading for Shattenkirk by Lundberg 91. The Blues need another top six scorer. Would you try to trade Nyquist along with high draft pick, and sorry, he's bolding, and or one of our defenseman prospects for him?
Who asked that question?
Lundberg 91.
Lundberg.
No, we're not going to, because Tampa's going to.
Domi scored again.
Domi Arica. No, that's not going to happen, because I'm almost certain that it's going to be Drouin for Shattenkirk and Fabry.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I think that is absolutely...
I mean, I would trade for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Would
you
trade Nyquist and Ouellette for him?
Sure.
And yeah, first?
I would.
He has, what, 1 year left on his contract?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd do that. Sure, why not?
Is he right-handed?
No. Yes, he is.
I'm just kidding. Either, I don't give a shit.
He's ambidextrous.
Yeah, he can do both.
Yeah. All right. What are your thoughts on Blashill at the halfway mark?
Still's a good name.
He's got great hairline. Him.
Yeah, I think he's a good coach. seriously, though. I think he's a good coach, and I honestly don't... I mean, when we were going through that little tough part, there were a lot of people who were like, seriously, this dude kind of sucks, and it's just like, you gotta give him his full, like, at least 2-3 years before you can say he sucks or not, just because, I mean, he isn't exactly... I mean, look at, like, take this whole cap situation as an example of what Ken Holland has given him. You can't really fault him. He's a smart guy. He always says smart things in his interviews, you know, in terms of, you know, well, we just need to play the puck quicker. We need to, you know, we need to do this. We need to do that. I think he's a much better personality than Babcock. I think the players like him more than Babcock. So I give him, so far, given what he has been handed, I give him an A-.
Yeah, he's adjusted well to the NHL. He's made decisions that make sense. I mean, he's playing players based off of them earning their spots in the lineup, not they've got a huge contract. He did things that we kind of screamed at Babcock to do for a couple of years, you know, split up Erickson and Cronwall. Don't play Glendening against the other team's top lines. Putting some youth into the lineup. He's doing that. He's not perfect. He's got to make some adjustments. But through half a season, it's hard not to be pretty satisfied so far. The follow-up question is, or one of the questions is about Granato getting replaced as the power play coach, which Granato runs the penalty killing. Firstweiler runs the power play. That's something has to happen there. I don't know if that's going to be on Blashill or Firstweiler or who, but somebody has to fix that.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm willing to give Blashill like a full season for a lot of things. I'm not willing to give Firstweiler that much leeway. I would be okay if they fired him now if the power play does not get better, because it's not like the power play is getting unlucky. They're simply not shooting the puck enough. There was something wrong with the way the power play is built, and I don't have the kind of patience for that with an assistant coach as I would with a head coach with the entire team. So get it fixed or get the hell out.
Yeah, and I think that's probably going to show one of Blashill's first faults, is that I think Firstweiler is kind of his buddy. I don't know if they're just going to do that. So I think that might end up being something that we might kind of say, all right, dude, it's your team. Like, because if you think about it, if this team had an actual power play that, you know, was like, even marginally better than what it is now, you'd think, how much different would the team look? You know, I mean, one goal changes how many of these games that they've lost in the past 15 games. So, yeah, I think that is a legitimate concern, and I think that Firstweiler is not that good. So, yeah.
There's an we kind of skipped out the center portion of that PA Wingsman question. Do you think Blash and Ken Holland will have a better approach of putting the best team on the ice compared to Babcock and Ken Holland? I think that's an interesting question because specifically what's happened with Marchenko this year. I mean, they waived Jakob Kindle to keep him in the lineup. Do we think that that happens under Babcock?
No.
No.
No way. Marchenko's not on the team. If yeah. Babcock. I mean, Dylan Larkin. There's another example. Dylan Larkin earned a spot out of camp, and he made the team. He's been one of, if not the best, Red Wing forward all season.
Yeah.
And I don't think Larkin... I think Larkin could have had the exact same camp and have the exact same circumstances with Datsyuk missing the beginning of the season and everything, and I still think Larkin would have been sent down if Babcock's the coach. I just...
Yeah. I believe that, yeah. It's a gut feeling.
Maybe I'm 100% wrong, but it just... You never saw a young guy get that type of opportunity under Babcock. So, just... Those two decisions alone, to me, signify a change in direction.
Absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely. Ben Bishop, let's go Red Wings, ask, who's your favorite non-national broadcast team besides the FSD crew?
I mean, Ed Olchek, when he does Blackhawk games, is a real treat to listen to. And Pat Foley, who does their play-by-play, is just drunk all the time. So they are both awful.
The question was regional, right?
Yeah,
non-national.
Okay.
He says that the CSN crew on the San Jose game was not bad, but I disagree.
Little biased here, but I, as play-by-play guy, I do like Jack Edwards.
I like Jack Edwards, too.
Because he the homer shit is all there, but I just, he loves the game of hockey, and that comes out.
He owns it, though.
Sure.
I mean, that's the thing. It almost seems like, and part of this is from talking to you, Jeff, because you know him to some degree. It's almost like it's a character to a little bit, you know.
Well, it's him just turned up a little bit, but he is genuinely that enthusiastic about the Bruins and the game of hockey in person.
Mm-hmm. When he sang "We Wish You a Merry Christmas" during that fight or whatever, that was the most brilliant thing. Like, I had so much fun watching that, even though it was so corny, so cheesy, it didn't really make much sense, but it was really awesome, and it showed a lot of, you know, character, which is what you look for in a broadcast. You look for personalities that you can come back and want to see. The Red Wings don't really have that outside of Mickey Redmond, honestly.
Yeah, it shows that Jack Edwards has a fan feel for the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if he's singing "We Wish You a Merry Christmas" in the middle of a fight, he knows that the fight is ridiculous, and he's just adding on to the moment with his own brand of ridiculousness.
Right.
I love it. He didn't need to take anything too seriously, and like Jeff said, he really does love the game. I think the other thing with Jack Edwards that he gets a lot of undue criticism for is always an unabashed homer. I think that a lot of times people are listening to the Nesson broadcast and they hear Andy Brickley say something ridiculously homerishly stupid, and they just, in their mind, they reflexively blame Jack Edwards for saying it. Brickley is the real problem on the Nesson feed. Even then, he doesn't, I don't think that he ruins it. I think that probably the Nesson feed is one of the very best in all of the regional broadcasts, because specifically they are broadcasting to a Boston crowd. They are broadcasting to the home crowd. So why the hell not be homers? Outside of Nesson, I think that the Dallas Stars guys are real good.
Okay. Yeah.
They were way better when it was Ralph Stringus. It's basically Daryl Ray that drives that. Daryl Ray is wonderful. So, but the guy, I don't even know who the hell the play-by-play guy is there now, but he's okay, and then it's basically just waiting for Daryl Ray to say something entertaining.
Right.
I think the Kings local announcers do a pretty good, although a little dry, job. Other than that, no, I mean, it's a bunch of...
I've always enjoyed Strader in Arizona. He's a good play-by-play guy. And I like Forsland.
Tyson Nash is shit, though.
Tyson Nash is awful. So you watch it for Strader, and then Nash starts talking, and you just go, oh, God. I don't mind the Hurricanes guys. Forsland and I don't even know who does their color.
Yeah.
Whoever does their color. I mean, I don't watch a lot of Canes games. So, but Forsland I like as a... Yeah, I guess, you know, former Red Wing Nastrassel.
Yeah. Yeah. And
but
it's,
they're good.
Yeah, this wasn't the part of the question, but if you brought it up, though, if you go to National, and this is probably an unpopular opinion, I think that Doc is the best.
I really like Doc. I love Doc.
I think Doc's incredible. Mm-hmm. The way he calls the game is perfect.
No, I think Doc is the perfect play-by-play National guy for hockey. Yeah. His problem is he gets saddled with crap.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, they don't give Doc Brian Engblom a lot, because I think Brian Engblom is low-key really good.
Well, he's better once he stopped trying to be Pierre Maguire. Like, he just talked about hockey instead of, like, trying to do bullshit extra stuff and be over-the-top goofy. It calls it a game. What was it? Him and Strader used to do the NBC games as the B crew?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I enjoyed those broadcasts.
Yeah. NBC does, I mean, outside of, the obvious, Pierre is a shit heel, Olchek is a shit heel, but everything else, I mean, for the most part is great, but Doc, like, I look forward to NBC broadcasts because of Doc Emmerich. He is just world class.
Out there for the local guys, and I think there's actually not very many that I don't like, because I would rather listen to a homer that hates the Red Wings than a National guy trying to be objective but failing, like Olchek. Just like... Rick Jenneret bothers me because his voice just grates me. Like, it's not that he's bad at his job. I mean, he calls it well. He knows what he's talking about. It's just when his voice gets excited and he sounds like Yoda having an orgasm, it's just cut it out. it's time to go.
Oh, that's an awful image.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Beard League Arbitration wants to know the concept of trade value versus keep value. You've used the explanation of his keep value is greater than his trade value to temper trade speculation. Specifically, we talked about that with Jimmy Howard in the preseason.
Right.
Are there any roster players or prospects that you currently feel have a higher trade value than keep value?
Prospects that have higher trade value right now. Probably Mantha. It has a high trade value right now. I think his keep value is probably right about even. But I guess if it gets you a defenseman like that you really need, not just a rental, then I think his trade value is higher. An example for non-prospect, like if you look at Thomas Yurko, he has no trade value at this point. His keep value is higher. So
I think literally any of our defensemen have a higher trade value than keep value.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, sure. I think Cronwall would be a good one.
Cronwall will retire a Red Wing.
Yeah. Oh, no, I know, absolutely. But
I get what you're saying. It's funny. I would have said Abdelkader before he signed his contract.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
But then he signed the contract, and it's, still has high... I think he could have had high trade value as a rental.
Right.
To be able to package... I mean, you could have packaged him up at the trade deadline with a couple of other pieces to... somebody looking to kind of add some depth and kind of picked up maybe a couple of decent prospects, maybe some high picks for him.
Right.
But now that trade value is...
Well, honestly think about it, you look at all 30 teams in the NHL, regardless of what fan opinion or what people around hockey Twitter say or anything, I think every single team in the NHL would kill to have a player like Justin Abdelkader on their team.
Absolutely.
It's not even a question. It's just it is what it is. You know, he is a model of what NHL teams want in a player. Mm-hmm. Scoring, gritty, can play all situations. It's just he is that guy. So
And that's before he signed because now with that contract,
you can't move him really.
Because you would take him for the next 2, 3, 4 years, but it's years 5, 6, and 7 that you don't want to have him.
Mm-hmm.
So
right,
but yeah, he would.
I think
anybody
on an expiring contract has higher trade value than keep value.
Yeah, I think Helm is probably the one. Even though he hasn't really produced this year, I think a team could absolutely take a flyer on him at the deadline.
Yeah. JJ, do you say that about Datsyuk next year?
Not really, but
He's 30, 37. He's going to be 38, so...
I might.
I think it's the PR of trading Datsyuk in that year.
It would be a mess, yeah.
Real bad. And then I think that both Tatar and Nyquist are maybe just about even in trade value versus keep value, because I think they've got good value, in, like pretty high value in both categories. But there's also the consideration that it's possible that we may be able to spend one of those assets. Because that was the argument about Howard having high keep value is who the hell is going to be your backup? And like, cause I don't think Kuro's is going to do it, but you know, once we get to this summer and we can consider getting a backup sign for a decent cap hit, then yeah, I think that Howard's trade value exceeds his keep value. But that's a consideration there.
Yeah, for sure.
Next up, Big Tex D304. Who does your intro music? Those are some pretty fresh beats, and it's always something slightly different each week. Interested to know if this artist has any other material out there. We got a guy, his name is Justin, who does the music based off of Brandon Langer's... Langer. His original piece of Wim Radio music.
Justin, BrandonLangerMusic.com.
All right, thanks. Justin's home address is 1600 Avenue. And his social security number is 2-2-5-8-4. Next up. But,
oh, God.
Look him up. It's out there.
Next question.
His underwear size. Hey, Mantha, when are we gonna bring them up?
Not anytime soon.
Next year.
Yeah, one of them will be on the team next year.
Should we be buyers or sellers at the trade deadline?
Sellers. You should do both. I want them to do what the Panthers did last year. They sold people, they sold players, and then they bought players. They didn't make the playoffs, but they made good moves. I think that they should maybe look into that because, as I said before, the Red Wings aren't making a trade without dumping salary. They have to get rid of players like Quincy. They have to get rid of players like Helm. Those guys got to go. So you're not making any trades happen unless you have a catastrophic injury, which we don't want, depending on who it is.
Wink, wink. Aaron Erickson.
But personally, I think there probably will be an injury, and they will be able to get one player, maybe. Or I think that maybe Ken Holland, because you think about it, Ken Holland hasn't really done anything lately that you've gone, all right, that was pretty sick. I mean, I guess the Zidlicky deal was a good deal because, you know, you didn't really give up much for him at all. But the Cole trade was a disaster. I didn't like, I mean, you guys might feel different about it, but I thought it sucked. Leguan trade, whatever. I think that the only possible candidate I see is with the Jets. So,
yeah, that's lame. I don't think that we should be buyers, be sellers. You know, make smart moves, and that should be regardless of whether you're at the trade deadline. I think we're in a case right now where the Red Wings definitely should not be renters.
Exactly, I'm with you on that. They should not look into rentals.
Yeah, that's the concern. Commit to one of the other. Either go in and, you know, pick up a guy who's gonna be around for at least a year or two, or stand pat. Honestly, stand pat, cut some fat in the summer, and you know, whatever.
Yeah, I think I'm mostly comfortable with just sitting still, because I was so keen on it earlier in the year, but I don't really want anything to do with Dustin Byfuglien.
Nope.
I don't like him.
Well, and he's going
to
get.
If you're going to trade for him, you have to commit to signing him.
Yeah.
I'm not at all interested in giving assets to the Jets to just have Dustin Byfuglien around for a few months.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't know if I want him around for longer than that. So
he's a shithead.
And he's going to test the market. You can just tell. I mean, he's going to be the premier defensive free agent. I mean, teams are going to line up for him. So why wouldn't he test the market, right?
Right.
Kadiani 6 wants to know, do you look at any of the contending teams in the East and can honestly say they have a chance at beating any of the contending teams in the West for the Cup?
Yes.
Yes. Washington.
Washington can beat any team in the East right now. I don't care what anybody says. West. In the West, yeah, I'm sorry. I think that this is their year.
Yeah, to his credit, T and Kicker Death also brought this up in the comment. Like, do you think anybody in the West could take on the Capitals?
Blackhawks are still strong.
Yeah.
Dallas is better. The Kings are very good this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's going to be the Hawks and Kings until somebody knocks them off. And the thing about the West is it's top heavy.
Yeah.
Because once you get beyond that kind of that top four, the Pacific is garbage. So nobody from the Pacific outside of the Kings should even be mentioned as a team that should win a playoff series, let alone like, be a contender.
Well, that's the NHL in general.
Right.
Once you away from the top, it's just kind of like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, in the East, I mean, you have Washington, who's clearly the class of it. I'm still waiting for Tampa to figure out whatever their issues are and become the team that everybody thought they were going to become. They're playing a little bit better lately. If Montreal gets Price back, they're going to be dangerous.
I still think that they're fraudulent.
I think they're better than just being, you know, led by Carey Price.
I don't.
I think they're probably a move or two away from being probably best team in the Atlantic. Florida's a joke. No.
I don't even really consider them a contender. I'd like to, because I think that they have a really good team and they're architecting something really special there, but I just can't get into it just because, I don't know, they're just riding a super hot streak that is completely unsustainable, like any team on a hot streak. I'm not sold, so.
Yeah, I've got basically one Eastern Cup contender and three Western Cup contenders right now.
Yep.
Yeah, sounds pretty much right. Yep.
That's the easy way to go.
Beer League Arbitration again. Unique rink attributes. It's always struck me as odd that the Joe has its lively boards and such a small gap between the benches. While part of me likes these quirks, another part of me thinks there should be tighter standards. Do you know of any other rinks that have similar quirks? He mentions Rexall Place in Edmonton with the broadcast cameras on the wrong side. Others that have features that affect the gameplay?
Brooklyn has the weird hangover thing.
Yeah.
Wasn't built for hockey.
Doesn't Madison Square Garden have the backup goalie sits like away from the bench?
Where like the Zamboni comes in.
Yeah. I mean, the old Boston Garden used to be smaller than all the other rinks.
The glass in was that in Montreal or in Boston where Chara killed Pacioretty right before that guy?
That was in Montreal.
I think that all the teams nowadays have pretty consistently changed all their glass to be the same, but I remember not too long ago when it was, they would talk about the different glass and, you know, the stanchionless stuff and how much one would hurt more than the other. I think not so much rink quirks, but the character of the ice in so many arenas being so different has always struck me. Like, Edmonton gets credit for having really good ice, but I don't think they do. Many of the southern teams have choppy shit consistently, and you can see, like, I think the Ducks have specifically built themselves to be a choppy shit ice team, mm-hmm. which works really well for them. Like, they're not afraid to dump it around because the puck's gonna bounce over your sticks anyway. So, other than like some weird other quirks, it's how much the ice handles the puck, and it's the springiness of the boards, but I think that Joe's just gotten legendary lively boards for the Red Wings have been really good there for a while. It's not like other arenas don't have boards where you can bounce it back in front of the net.
That's an old arena thing, right? Because I mean, every old arena had their own little quirks, like the Chicago Stadium where you had to walk up the ramp and up the steps to get up to the ice, and I think that these days you don't build hockey arenas anymore, right? I mean, these arenas that are being built are multi-sport and multi-use facilities, so I don't think they can really deviate a whole lot from what they can do. Plus, there are safety regulations, like with seamless glass and stuff like that. I mean, I'm sure that they have to adhere to. So
yeah, they're basically slowly breeding the quirks out.
Yeah, I think that one thing that many people forget and ignore is the color of the net. The Joe has the black net, and then a lot of them have the white one. I think that is
Safety net.
Yeah, the safety net. Like,
I'm thinking the goals. I'm like,
that's what I thought you were talking about. Like, all the nets are the same, Kyle.
What the hell's wrong with you guys? No, the safety nets. I'm sorry, but yeah, think that might have a lot to do with deception and the way you look at the you look at, like, you know, what's in front of you, possibly. Might change things.
Teeny Kick or Death mentions that Rafi Torres' suspension is up any day. Is there still a place for him in this league?
Why are we talking about this guy?
No.
No.
Teeny Kick or Death asked.
I know, I'm kidding. No.
Don't be addicted to Teeny Kick or Death, Kyle.
I'm not being addicted to him, I'm just saying.
He or she's...
how many days do you give it before Rafi Torres gets suspended again?
1 month.
If that happens, then the NHL has been like, "Hurry, dude, bye."
If he does something suspendable, they're just going to kick him out. And even if they don't, even if they throw, 41 games a year, whatever, at him, nobody's going to take him after that.
Yeah.
Because there'll be a liability.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm sure someone would.
Well, maybe Boston. Boston would take him.
Sideshow it.
It would be a huge story.
A team that wants to have an all-star captain.
It's true.
He'll be the next guy who he'll
probably. I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't think that Rafi Torres is going to have his career ended by suspensions because I don't think the league is ever going to like truly kick a guy out. Mm-hmm. He'll get another 41 game suspension if anything.
I think
it's going to have to be. Yeah, he's going to have to potentially be blacklisted by GMs who just don't want to deal with the liability of it all. MD Row 12 wants to sign one, trade the rights, and not sign college prospects Mike McKee, David Pope, and James DeHaas. Do you guys have any opinion on this?
You sign DeHaas. The other guys, I really don't care. So I guess you keep the rights of Pope and you kick McKee because he seems to be just a big.
Just get rid of them all.
That's right. McKee's like that. Isn't he like 6'7" or something like that?
He's massive, and he plays like
Western, right?
Yeah, he was a defenseman, and they've been playing him like a forward, and it's just not good. It's not working, and Western isn't that good. So yeah, I'd get rid of him. But they don't have him signed to a contract, so he literally, it doesn't matter. You're not getting anything out of him at all, ever. So
definitely not a Mickey Mouse. He's really big.
Oh, God.
Damn it, JJ.
I didn't have any opinion on them, so I asked both Michelle and Joe, and they agreed with Kyle. You sign DeHaas, and the other two are basically, it doesn't really matter which one you do. Michelle said trade McKee's rights and don't sign Pope. Joseph, I don't think... No, he didn't say anything specifically. He just said they're interchangeable, so do whatever the hell you want with them. I would get rid of Pope because Joe interviewed him and asked him my question, what does it feel like... what's it like to outrank Ben Bishop? And he didn't get that joke. So.
You'll never like him because of that.
Yeah, I will always hate. I'll always hate David Pope for.
Even if he comes to the NHL and is like a 30 goal scorer, you'll just be like, ah, whatever, fuck that guy.
You gotta figure, the guy's heard every Pope joke in the world since then. So, yes, bet on DeHaas and kick McKee. Who cares? All right, Eric at PRBU asks a loaded question that he already knows the answer to, but he wants to go ahead and ask it anyway. I really like him. Are the young guys stepping up enough to replace aging Pavin Z? Should people be worried about this?
Yeah.
Outside of Larkin, I'm not sure anyone looks like they can take the reins from these guys.
I guess maybe there's a little bit of nostalgia coloring our view of Datsuk and Zetterberg, but, I mean, Datsuk... I see a lot of parallels with this, and I see Larkin as the Zetterberg, because Zetterberg kind of burst onto the scene, and he was very strong immediately as a rookie, whereas Datsuk, I mean, I remember in 06, we were talking about, is Pavel Datsuk ever going to score a playoff goal? Like, he had that reputation as a strong regular season performer who just could not get it done in the playoffs, and then he kind of picked it up in 07 and started scoring some goals, and then turned into Pavel Datsuk. Mm-hmm. So I think it might be a little bit early to worry about, is somebody going to replace Pavel Datsuk? Because I don't think you need to replace him. I think what you need to do is build a new core. You start with Larkin. You've got Tatar and Nyquist in that core, and you've still got players to come, so you don't know what you have yet.
Well, I think when Pav and Z were rookies or second year players, the Wings really didn't have the depth in the prospect pool that they have now. Other than Larkin, we might not have a superstar coming to the extent of those guys were, but I think the depth of having more higher end guys, if you want to include Tatar, Nyquist, Ethan, ICU, Mantha, that could be five guys right there that you got to build with for the next 10 years.
If you think about it like a roulette wheel, back in the late 90s, the Red Wings were basically just putting all their money in on one number, and it hit a couple of times. And, you know, I think it's kind of distorted this reality that, oh, they're so great at drafting. It's like, no, they're not. They had the ability to, because in the late round, you're taking guys that are just talented. That's it. If they're talented and you take them in the fifth round or the sixth round, you're really taking a flyer on, because they're not expected to be NHL players. But the Wings had the ability back then to develop those guys and not really worry about, are they going to turn into NHL players? Turned out that they did kind of get a little bit lucky, and they turned into two superstars. Now what they've done is they're spreading out their bets on that same roulette table. So, yeah, maybe there isn't another superstar yet in the system, but there are more guys that I think could step into an NHL lineup within the next 1 to 3 years and be positive contributors, and that'll make them a better team.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. It's not necessarily that they're going to have one guy that's as good as Datsyuk, but I think people think of like the golden age of when Datsyuk and Zetterberg were at their very prime, and like want that to happen. But the 07-08 Red Wings had, and even like the 06-07, there were some shit forwards on that team.
Absolutely.
So if you can get guys that maybe aren't like as good as Datsyuk, then obviously you want guys that are as good as Datsyuk, but I think that you can still equal that team by having more depth like you guys are talking about. So I don't know. I'm worried, but I'm not panicked.
I'd be more concerned about somebody stepping up and being an anchor on the defense than replacing Datsyuk and Zetterberg.
Yeah, we already have enough of that.
Who in the Wings organization do you think are viewed as tradable, and do you think are untouchable? I'm going to start off with this one with, I think basically all the roster players are untouchable until I see Ken Holland trade a roster player again. It's been, what, Jason Williams was the last regular roster player that Ken Holland traded off the team? We're not counting Mike Commodore, because he was already like a scratch who had begged his way out. We're not counting Patrick Eaves, because he basically had never played. The last guy who played like regular shifts for the Red Wings who got traded in the season was Jason Williams for Kyle Calder.
I agree with you on that. I don't think we see anybody get traded, just because it just doesn't seem like Ken Holland's status quo lately.
We've kind of touched on this a bit, but the Birdman wants to why is Nyquist all in all the trade talk and Tatar in none of it?
Because Tatar scored a goal the last few games.
Well, I think it's a combination of that, but also I think people seem to feel like Nyquist would have a higher trade value than Tatar does, for whatever reason.
Might be his contract.
Well, I'm sure that's a part of it. You get out of that contract. Although, again, going back to the previous question, Ken Holland just signed him to this long extension. Do you think he's going to trade him now?
No.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, that's not, like I said, that's not Ken Holland's status quo. Ken Holland is he's a very prideful GM. Like, I mean, he takes so much pride in the players that he drafts and develops. Like, I don't know, like in terms of like NHL players, of course, not like Kelly Yarncroc, who, you know, never could make the team and now is just, you know, whatever in Nashville, and like Matthias Janmark, who started off really hot after the trade like Yarncroc did, and now is just, you know, he's just a decent depth player. So I think he just takes a lot of pride in that stuff. I don't know. That's just me speculating, of course, but I think that certainly has something to do with it. I don't think he's going to trade Nyquist. I think he sees Nyquist as a true leadership, like a true future part of the core of leadership in this team. And I kind of do too. So, I mean, you know, whatever.
I think the fans talk about trading Nyquist instead of Tatar because Tatar is more fun.
Yes. Yeah.
I think the fans don't want to trade Tatar off because, yeah, he's. He has more fun when he scores goals. Yeah, mm-hmm. He seems to have more fun off the ice. He's just he's a bigger personality, and so I personally wouldn't want to see him traded as much as Nyquist for perhaps not good hockey reasons.
Yeah. The Coyotes won.
Yeah, like 11 seconds left to go in overtime.
Did Domi score?
No, it was Ekman-Larsson.
Future Red Wing.
That is a guy like now.
That's not happening. Now,
that would be a guy that I would probably, you know, I would splooge on. Like I would spend big time on him.
Splurge on him. Okay. I mean, I'd splooge about him, but not on him. I mean, if he asks, I'll never turn anybody down, but
fucking guys, so much.
All right, we got any questions left? We should probably wrap this up shortly.
Actually, one came in at the end here.
Yeah, it's
kind of funny.
What kind of difference would an outside of one with top two potential should they target? I don't think anybody they should target that's not got top potential.
They got plenty of defensemen without top potential.
Basically, the question boils down to, should the Red Wings try for an offensive defenseman or a defensive defenseman? If you have to go for one or the other, which would you pick?
Defense? God, I don't know.
Can we have, like, a solid two-way guy?
Can we just Nick Lidstrom come back?
Yes. Can we do that?
Is there any question that at his age right now, Nick Lidstrom would step in and still be the best defenseman on the Red Wings?
He'd be better than Cronwall and Eric.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he'd be the best, but he would definitely be a top four.
We could have Lidstrom and DeKeyser right now as our top pair.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be sexy.
Although, my answer is I would go for an offensive defenseman, honestly. Because I think that in general, offensive defensemen get derided as not being good at defense instead of they don't have to play as much defense because they always have the puck. Or defensive defensemen get propped up as this paragon of old glory days of the battles in front of the net, and it's because they basically never have the damn puck. So give me the guy who has the puck more often. Give me an offensive defenseman.
All right, great. Let's look ahead to the week that is ahead of us.
No.
No?
No.
Do we have more questions?
No.
No?
No, then yes.
Okay,
let's charge. The Coyotes won in overtime as we were recording this, and the Red Wings play the Coyotes on Thursday night in Arizona, and then they're back home on Sunday against the Flyers on national television. Two games. What's the record? Graham.
1-0-1. They lose to Arizona in a shootout, beat Philly in the home game coming back.
JJ.
I think they're going to take it to Arizona again like they did the first time they played them. This is just going to be the year that they just dominate Arizona again. And then the first game back from a road trip is always really tough, but I'm going to be at that Philly game, so they're going to look like crap but pull the game off.
You're going to be in Detroit?
Yeah.
What the fuck? They didn't tell me that.
There's a reason.
I told you last year.
God.
I kind of remind you all the time.
Yes. Anyways. Kyle. They're going to win both games because they're going to take it to Arizona, and they aren't playing the Flyers at Wells Fargo, so we'll be all right.
They're going to lose both because Domi's scoring a lot of goals, apparently, and he's going to show Larkin that he should win the Calder, and then they're going to lose to the Flyers because maybe I'll work for them one day.
You are a terrible fan.
That's all I got. Great. Do you guys have any final hockey-related thoughts?
You are a terrible fan.
Just wet fart on the end of the podcast.
Yeah, good God.
Well, you guys are being all positive. Someone had to bring a little negativity.
Doom and gloom horse shit.
Usually JJ has to yell at me for that stuff.
Oh, I just wait till Phoenix takes a 1-0 or Arizona takes a 1-0 lead on Thursday, and then you'll just want to die and tell us how much we suck. Trade everybody. We're horrible.
You fold the team. Burn Joel and Serena to the ground.
I never once said that.
Don't want to get high expectations.
You don't want high expectations for the week.
Jeff's going to come into the chat and be like, told you guys.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, final hockey-related thoughts for real, because we are super heavy on this podcast, and Justin is not going to be pleased.
Oh, man. I will never forgive your ass for this shit. This is some fucked up, repugnant shit.
Great. All right, then for JJ and Graham and Kyle, it's been Winging It Motown Radio. See you next week, everybody.
Winging it.
Winging it.
I'm winging it, Motown. Winging it. You ripped the handle off the Segway, turned it into a hoverboard, and now it caught fire.
That's fair.
Oh, I'm struggling.
The pipeline is severely pruned.